Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
To everyone who loves the taste of tradition, come enjoy a classic Wisconsin fish fry at Culver's.
I'm Genesis from Culver's in Claremont, Florida. And here, family fish fry is a part of who we are. We've been serving up fish fry favorites for over 40 years, all thanks to the Culver Family Roots and Wisconsin Supper Club, the place where the fish fry was perfected. If you're craving something crispy on the outside and flaky on the inside, you've got to try our hand-battered North Atlantic cod. It's perfectly seasoned and my personal favorite. Or if you're in the mood for a little extra crunch, our lightly breaded butterfly jumbo shrimp hits the spot every time. Whatever you order, I promise it will be made with love by a team who cares, because we want every guest to feel like family. That's just how we do it in Wisconsin. Dive into delicious with all your fish fry favorites at Culver's.
From Wisconsin with love, welcome to delicious.
50.
Blue Hawaiian charts at number 50. That's right. From Bright in the Corners, your first tour. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. I don't know whether they played it. I can't remember. Maybe somewhere there's the set list and, you know, it's. I could confirm that.
Set list FM.
Yeah. So I'll make a note.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't remember. Yeah.
Hey, this is Westy from the rock and roll band Pavement, and you're listening to The Countdown.
Hey, it's JD here, back for another episode of our Top 50 Countdown, covering seminal indie rock band Pavement. Week over week, we're going to count down the 50 essential Pavement tracks that you selected with your very own Top 20 ballots. I then tabulated the results using an advanced abacus and some test tubes. And all that's left for us is to reveal this week's track. How will your favorite song fare in the rankings? Well, you'll need to tune in, or whatever the podcast equivalent of tuning in is, to find out. This week, we're joined by Pavement superfan, Dan from London. So there's that. Dan, how you doing, motherfucker?
Hi, JD. I'm doing okay, thanks. Yeah, all is good here, I think.
Nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's good to be back on.
Yeah. So let's get right to it. Talk to me about your experience or your Pavement origin story. Like, what was that experience like?
I think when I was at art college, a lot of people were playing snippets of Pavement stuff. You know, I didn't necessarily know what it was. I remember hanging out with a guy in his car, and he used to have like speakers off an actual stereo in the back of his car, you know, like
what?
Speaker cabinets, wooden speaker cabinets. And I remember him blasting a bit of Westing through there as well, and feeling pretty interested in that. But it was really when I went to university, and I was at this girl's house, you know, and we'd been sort of drinking all night, and she put on this tape, and one side was Gentlemen by Afghan Whigs and the other side was Crooked Rain, and Crooked Rain just blew me away. You know, I think that had impacted me on first listen more than any other record ever has, I think, you know.
Holy just, shit.
Yeah, I think that the way it builds up those first two tracks are just amazing, you know. There's nothing else like it. And then, of course, it goes into Stop Breathing, and it's like, oh my God, okay, this is too much, man. Yeah. But after that, I actually I got back into them and had a load of stuff on tape, and I was playing along with it on my bass as well. But I actually worked at Glastonbury in 1999 just so I could see Pavement as well.
You worked there?
Yeah.
So what, were you like a usher or something?
Yeah, you work on the gates, so you take people's, you know, tickets and exchange them for the wristbands, and then in the evening, well, it was actually ultraviolet sort of stamps, and yeah, you know, and then you'd have to check people in and out at the night time. You do 3 8-hour shifts, so you do 24 hours at the festival, but my shifts lined up nicely so that I got out of them when Pavement wrong. And
perfect.
It was a crazy good afternoon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then after that, yeah, say I saw them on the reunion tour, and then the rest is when I kind of saw them with you, basically Primavera,
yeah,
London. Yeah,
that was great.
But
talk to me a little bit more about. Talk to me a little bit more before we go into the London shows, because those were really special. But talk to me a little bit more about Glastonbury. Like, what was the set like for that? What, that was 99, so they were on the last leg, okay, sort of Terror Twilight.
Yeah. So there was a lot of Terror Twilight. I mean, I can't find any footage of this, but basically when they came on stage, they were introduced by this dude. It just came on, was a friend of theirs. And I think he was like either like a pub landlord or like some bookmaker from Brixton, you know, this random guy that they loved. And he introduced the band and they came on. Yeah, I think there was a mixed bag, but it was quite Terror Twilight heavy. But I just remember the outstanding thing from that was just like Folk Jam was amazing.
Really?
I've a Folk Jam or Platform Blues. Yeah, I need to look at that set list now and just still remember. But the thing about that is that I still have the 35 millimeter sort of camera film undeveloped from that whole Glastonbury experience. Yeah, it's been sitting there for what, nearly like 24 years now. So I've still got to get that done. So I have.
Where do you even get film? Well, where do you get film developed now?
Places will do it, but I just never got around to it. I've got about 14 rolls of camera film from my life.
Dan.
That I get to look. Yeah, well, it's a time capsule. Yeah, but I'll do that. Yeah,
I'll do that. And then I want to see those.
Yeah, you'll get to see how scrawny I was back in 99.
Half Dan from London.
Very much so. Yeah, beanpole. Yeah. But that was cool. Also on the bill, either before, I think it was directly before them, was Wilco during the summer teeth period. So that was pretty cool as well. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What a great lineup.
Yeah, the chip felt good for that. Yeah.
I won tickets to Glastonbury one year. I got a call from a radio station. I entered a contest and I won. And they called me on a Friday. And my plane would have left on Monday to go. And it was exactly 10 years after I won another contest. It was like 10 years to the weekend. I won a trip to St. John's, Newfoundland to see a secret concert by Molson Canadian Beer. So anyway, 10 years later, I win tickets to Glastonbury. So that would have been 2004, I guess, 2004 or 2005. I don't know what the lineup was, but they were going to book my flight that night and I needed a passport and I didn't have a passport. So I couldn't accept the prize. And they were like, sorry, it was in the terms and conditions that you had to have a passport. And I was like, I can get one. Like I can fast track it and I can have it by Monday. And they're like, sorry, we need to book the flight. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Oh man.
I'll have to look and see who was on that lineup. Who did I miss out?
Yeah. But I mean, it's, you know, Glastonbury is not what it used to be. You know, it's been steadily sort of gentrified, really. Yeah. So
it's like Coachella is now.
But I mean, when I was there working on the gates, a couple of funny things happened. So one of which, we had our suntan lotion stolen from us. So we were just getting burned out there all day.
Oh, shit.
The second was there was this guy. And he had this big bottle of vodka pulled out of his bag and they were like, you can't bring that bottle in here, you know? So he sat by the side of the queue and he just started knocking back this vodka, this like, I don't know, barely 18-year-old guy. And, you know, he pretty much got like halfway through the bottle and was just looking absolutely off his face. And then he pulled another, you know, bottle out of his bag and it was a bottle of Coke and he was pouring the Coke in to dilute it and then he looked at his Coke bottle, which was plastic, and he just like, it's like, oh fuck, because basically it was the glass bottle he couldn't take in, so he could have tipped it into his Coke bottle, he could have kept the vodka, but he necked like half a bottle. So he had this realization in this burning hot sun and the security guy clocked it and he was just like, okay, just, you know, pour it in and bring it on in, you know. And I saw this poor guy stagger through, and that was his start of his festival. He was just wasted beyond belief.
Holy yeah. shit.
But also, the perimeter fence that they have there, I saw people like throwing like dogs over. I saw like a family sort of, the guy got over and then they threw the baby over the fence and he caught that and then his wife came. I mean, it was just pretty mental. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so, you know, I don't think you get that much of that these days.
Oh, that's cool. What a fun experience. So that was that was your first time seeing them then? 99?
Yeah. I mean, I was at Reading when they played, but I retired to my tent to make some beans. Yeah.
I remember you telling me that. The background. Yes. Yeah,
but so I didn't see them with Gary because I was too busy eating beans.
Because you didn't know of them at that point yet?
I wasn't overly familiar with them, no.
Right. You hadn't listened to the cassette yet, the Crooked Rain cassette. The infamous Crooked Rain cassette incident.
Yeah, that would literally happen like a year later or something, you know, so.
Fuck. Yeah, to see them with Gary would have been really interesting. I think there's definitely some Gary tracks in this top 50 list, and it'll be interesting to revisit those tracks, like after listening to so much Westy. And I think Westy's a great drummer, but Gary is just different.
Yeah, I love Gary. Gary's, I think other people have said it, but there's something kind of melodic about Gary's beats as well. Yeah. You know, they carry things in a different way, and they carry things in a very atmospheric way as well. I mean, sometimes they just turn the guitars down, don't they? They just let the drums come through for a bit to build up, and then they just come back in. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool.
So what was the highlight of, obviously I was with you, but you have to, the rest of the audience wasn't with us, so they don't know. Talk to me a little bit about the London shows.
Well, I mean, it's difficult because we did three, and it's all a bit of a, you know, a bit of a mush in my mind, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, the first night was a bit difficult because we were kind of really at the back, and I didn't really appreciate it much from the back of the room. But the next two nights when we had those phenomenal views, I mean, that was just my dream would always have been to see, you know, Pavement, like watching them from the side of the stage, you know. I mean, that's a life ambition for me, and we got that. So for me, it was just seeing them all in action, you know, from an angle that you wouldn't get to appreciate them from, you know. I mean, like they did a huge variety of tracks.
Every night was different. We saw three nights in a row and I wasn't bored at all.
Yeah, I mean, the second night we were there, we had really, really obscure stuff going on in the set list as well. So that was great. But yeah, I'm never, like, my memory's the same as yours. I'm never one that can just remember certain things from certain gigs. That's why I taped, you know, that's why I videoed the whole thing so I can watch it.
Right. I just think my highlight was the second night on that balcony. We were there with SM's daughter and her friend, and it was their daughter's birthday. And afterward, we went backstage and got offered cake. And I remember I remember thinking, like, whose life am I living right now? This is fucking bonkers.
it was good. It was good. I mean, it was so relaxed as well. It was just really chilled out. And it was great to have that experience there. Yeah. And then just getting back in the dressing room, talking to, I spoke a lot to Remco, caught up with him, and then we were talking to Spiral for a long
everybody
time.
Else. Who's Remco?
So Remco's pretty much the sort of Pavement European sound engineer. He does the Jix stuff as well, but also he has the recording studio that was it Wig Out at Jagbags was recorded? I can't remember which Malcolm's album.
I didn't know that.
But one of them, yeah, look it up, yeah. But Remco's cool, yeah. And he also does the European sound for when Spiral touring as well, so yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's a cool guy.
Yeah. I thought it was so cool when you were like, oh, that's Remco over there. And I'm like, who the fuck is Remco? And you go over and he's like, hey, Dan.
and Remco is in Marble Valley as well. Yeah, because Marble Valley was pretty much all of Pavement's roadies apart from Steve West, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't listened to much Marble Valley, but I've listened to it a couple times. Yeah, I dig it. I dig it. I also like that Unmastered Masters record that he put out. That
yeah, I still good. Need to get into that. Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, shall we get to the main course here, Sir Dan?
Dan Lisa? Yeah, far away.
All right. Well, what we're going to do is take a brief intermission and we'll come back on the other side and talk about track number 49.
What is Dax? Are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen. Yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge. Trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
GEICO makes it easy to get affordable renter's insurance in as little as 90 seconds. And then you'll start to wonder why everything else isn't so fast. Like, why does it take so long to do the dishes? A meal that's gone in three requires 45 minutes worth of dishes. Doesn't make sense. But it does make sense to get renter's insurance through GEICO. That way, that pile of dirty dishes and the other things you love are covered. Get more with GEICO.
Hey, this is Bob Nastanovich from Pavement. Thanks for listening. And now on with a countdown.
All right, we are back, and you heard it. Track number 49, Best Friend's Arm. Dan, what are your thoughts?
Oh, man. Well, this track was really my introduction to Wowie Zowie. I didn't own it at the time, and my friend Andy used to have it. And out of all the tracks, I used to make this and put this on repeatedly. Say we used to sit on the floor and listen to it, and I used to roll around, kind of, I wasn't exactly laughing, but it's just like I just couldn't get over how mad and how fun that track is.
Yes,
you know, it's
I have the word frenetic written down.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, it's got huge amount of energy, but it's also very obscure. It's one of the most obscure tracks that Pavement have done, I would say. And it's an enigma as well, in my mind.
The verses are like screamed out in like a punk way, you know? It's, I don't know that there's any other vocal performance by SM that is quite like Best Friend's Arm. Like it really is one of a kind.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I have in my notes because it's kind of interesting what I came up with, because this analyzing this track just broke me completely, you know. So basically, like, yeah, you know, it's 2:19. Again, it's the perfect bridging track between Extradition and Grave Architecture, yes, which are both pretty mad tracks. But Extradition has got that wonkiness that brings you into this.
Yeah.
But it's like, this is fast and loose. Sounds like it's spur of the moment and probably like a one take thing. But in the beginning, say it sounds with what sounds like a snippet of a phone call, like a bit of an authoritarian woman's voice saying, "No, you don't have to," which is weird. Yeah. You never get that on anything else, particularly a woman's voice. And then you've got the whole sort of start thing, which is almost akin to Silent Kid, you know, with the whole sort of like tambourine sound, Bob doing some mad Moog noises, there's feedback. But it just sounds like the band has been teleported in, you know, to this studio or this event that they're at, and they're running late, and they just, this is the sound I'm getting, teleported in, bang, they arrive, and then they have to get going straight away, you know, and it's like, Malmsteen is almost like making up time, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. But also the other analogy that I had for this as well was, you know, this is like in Back to the, Marty's band in Back to the Future when they're auditioning for the spot at the prom show, you know, and it's the whole, you're just too darn loud thing. It's,
yeah.
For me, this is like a Pavement take on that, you know, it's like imagining themselves in that situation and just like trying to, I don't know, like almost like as an amateur band come up with this loud sound that's going to try and impress someone and it just doesn't. Yeah. It's pretty mad.
Who's doing the backup vocals on it? Is it SM singing his own backups on the track? I don't know about live. Like live, obviously he doesn't, but.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the whole thing about it. So obviously like he's singing the main bit, which is just basically unintelligible. And then you've got the, yeah, almost like the call and response. I can see. I mean, I was going to ask you, is it like Spiral? Is it like Bob? I don't know.
It sounds like Steve to me.
But when you get further down into the track as well with the Best Friend's Arm bit,
yeah,
it's like who the first part of that you hear, the first few lines, you know, that come in, like who is singing on that? Because it sounds like an English voice. It's like, it's just weird.
Yeah.
And then the backing on that, the rest of the band join in, you know, singing the line, but they're all singing it in a different way every time as well.
Yes.
It's, yeah, like the harmonies and everything, they're just totally different. So it's just crazy, you know. I mean, you know, the thing I was going to say about the lyrics are that they are just delivered at such a speed and with such ferocity that they're kind of unintelligible. And then the first bit where you do get to a section of the song that actually sort of dies down a bit, where you kind of get, you know, the jazzy rise that ends on that weird flat note, and then you get the big low bit, and you know, the guitars fall away and the drums are there, and it's just like Steve starts singing and you're thinking, oh my god, I'm actually gonna be able to hear what he's saying. And then he basically just says, well, I mean, what does he actually say there? Is it like, my baby's got the postage in the line?
Yeah, but your baby's got a like, postage in the line. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's almost sounding like a low-end sort of pathetic kind of club singer style. And it's like...
Yes, yes.
This, yeah, and it's like, I can hear what you're saying, but it has no resemblance to anything else. It sheds no light on the situation.
No.
And it's the same thing as the old I can see, I can see, I can see bits. It's like, those sound like they're from a different song completely. You know, it's crazy, yeah.
Fuck. It really is crazy. Is like, is it kosher to say the word schizophrenic at this point? Like it's the song is all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing I love the most about it. I mean, the sounds in there are crazy as well, because it's all carried on, you know, by Eyebold's bass, and Eyebold's bass is just like so madly overdriven that it sounds like some kind of out of control lawnmower. And then towards the end, it like sounds like some kind of out of control bus, or, you know, in the Best Friend's Arm bit. And then the guitars are clean, you know, they're sort of chimey, either jazzy or melodic. And it's just crazy, yeah. And the as you say, the guitar solos, they're schizophrenic as well. You've got two guitar solos going on. They don't really bear much relation to each other. They're, you know, inharmonic. And yeah, it's just like, they're just going for it.
It's like if you go to a restaurant and you go into the kitchen and you see all these ingredients that don't work together, you know, like, and then the chef comes in and mixes them together in such a deft way that you eat this end product and you're like, fuck, this is delicious. But it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. It doesn't, like, if we were to listen to the individual tracks on this song, like break it down and listen to the tracks, you would never think that these tracks fit together, if that makes sense.
You could not design this song.
No.
That would be a dream come true to actually be able to deconstruct this song. Yeah, just to hear those tracks. I mean, I would just love to hear the bass and the drums together, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like a strong thing that's going on, but the guitars, man.
Really, yeah. Great, right?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's because it's pretty wonky and it's fun and it's like kind of don't give a fuck really, isn't it? You know, it's just like, you know, is it a play on the fact that, like, you know, oh, we're getting renowned for, like, you know, saying that we can't play or being regarded as not being able to play? You know, is it just taking that to a new dimension, taking those comments and that perspective out of proportion? I don't know.
Yeah.
As I say, it's an enigma.
It really is.
But did you actually have a look at the lyrics? Because
I did. I've got them printed out right here.
Yeah, because whoever had a stab at that has done pretty well.
But I think so.
When you put them together with what's going on, it's like, yeah, they're not accurate at all. But then you can't improve on them because what is there is just not there, you know?
And if you can't think of anything, then you're going to drink and think it later.
Yeah. And then the next line, he's gone at it so hard on that line, it's just a cough. And then you go.
That cough is in there. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but it's because he's going at a million miles an hour. Yeah.
I really feel like you're onto something with this whole, like, this might have been just, you know, a loosen up song. You know, it might have been like, okay, we're in the studio now. Let's just rip one out before we record something like proper.
Yeah.
You know, and then it came out and it's like, this is what it is. You know, like Pavement's two-take band, you know? So I'm pretty sure that whoever was producing it might have said, I think it's easily who produced Wowie Zowie. You know, they might have said, have another stab at those vocals. And he's like, no. And they're like, yeah, but there's a cough in it. And he's like, yeah, that's it. It's so what?
I mean, a cough in that delivery is not going to improve it in any way. You know, it just doesn't improve the lyrics that he's not coughing over. You can't make out what the hell they are.
Right.
You know, but I mean, I think they did it and it's just like, my God, this is just such a fun song. This is just so full of energy. And it's just, I mean, it obviously makes them smile. It obviously makes them laugh. You know, I mean, imagine playing it, you know,
I can't. Did they play this song, like, on the road? Is this one they took out the road?
Yeah. So in terms of it being on the road, I mean, in terms of the lyrics, you know, like the radio session that they've got on the Sordid Sentinels edition of Wowie Zowie.
Right.
The one that was recorded in Australia. Obviously, like, the lyric bear no resemblance. You know, the song is nearly twice as long. But then also on the road, you know, like, the roles are interchangeable. So Bob, you know, I've seen him sing in the verses, you know, and they're even more unintelligible, you know.
Really?
So, yeah, there's some good footage out there of them doing it a few times in 94, I think, as they were sort of developing the album, and then a couple of times in 95, I think.
Yeah, it doesn't fit on any other record. It doesn't, like, no. Maybe it would fit on, like, Demolition Plot or Perfect Sound Forever. maybe, yeah. But it's like, it's not like anything else. It really isn't.
Right. I mean, you know, that's what I ended up doing earlier on was, you know, looking at other tracks that had sort of lyrics that were sort of like low down in the mix or obscured, you know, in some other way, you know, looking at things like, I don't know, Recorder Grot and things like that.
Yeah.
And old like Spizzle Trunk, you know, and it's like, yeah, you've got to go back that far to get that obscure, you know. And this is why I think, like, you know, Wowie Zowie is like almost like a really good, you know, updated version of Westing. Yeah. You know, but yeah, it's interesting to actually be able to go back that far. And then, you know, the lyrics on the stuff on Westing is more intelligible than something that's recorded on a huge, you know, huge studio later on in their career. Yeah. It's just cool. It's just so interesting.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. But also, you know, with the main line, you know, what do you think keep it under your best friend's arm means to you?
I wish I could put it together. I don't think it's related to anything in the main part of the song. I really don't know. I should have went back and listened to my episode on Best Friend's Arm to see what I thought then, because I don't remember. I have such a piss poor memory.
I did review the episode, yeah, but I don't think
I offered any insight.
I don't think the answers are there. No,
no,
no.
That doesn't surprise me.
I mean, for me, like, you know, it's pretty much sort of two songs, but if there is a relation between the back half and the front half, you know, like the front half is almost like a kind of like a friend listening to a drunken conversation or drunken confession and just going, oh yeah, yeah, okay, okay, okay. And it's almost like, yeah, you know, that person may have told somebody, yeah, you know, a secret, you know, or a truth that they don't want revealing to anybody else. So I guess like keep it under your best friend's arms is like keeping a secret, you know.
Oh, that's, I mean, cool.
If you were to look at the sort of lyrics that are actually in there that you can hear, I mean, maybe, you know, like baby's got a postage in the line is like, what, somebody got pregnant? I don't know. But that's obviously reading way, way too much in it, because it's not about anything.
Yeah, that's
it?
A pretty big leap, postage to pregnancy.
Yeah. Yeah. But for me, you know, I'm getting a real high school vibe from this, obviously, you know, with my Back to the Future references and this kind of thing. Yeah. And then you were talking about the ending as well, you know, and it's like a real kind of scratch ending. And it's like, again, it's like the whole Back to the Future thing of just like, shut up, you've got to leave the stage now. No good. Get off. And they disappear as quickly as they came on. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just very abrupt. Very abrupt.
Eyebold gets his last bit of bass in before the big, you know, the big hook stick comes and pulls him off, yanks him off stage.
Oh, fuck. Well, man, it's been great talking to you about Best Friend's Arm and your Pavement experiences. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Oh, man. No, I mean, basically, you know, I did do some recording of my experience at Primavera seeing Pavement and meeting you for the first time and hanging out with you, JD. And I'm going to try and release that on a video on YouTube at some point very soon. So there's that, which also has the full Porto Primavera set, which will come out as a separate video as well. So,
oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, so maybe you could pass on the details, JD, when those come out.
Yeah, I certainly will.
Yeah, post them up somewhere.
I want to thank you again. It's been great talking to you once again, and we'll do this again sometime.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks, JD.
All right, wash your goddamn hands.
Thanks for listening to Meeting Malcolmus, a Pavement podcast, where we count down the top 50 Pavement tracks as selected by you. If you've got questions or concerns, please shoot me an email, jd@meetingmalcolmus.com.
Duvra!
podcasts and such.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Whether you're looking to buy your dream home or rent a sweet apartment, give Redfin your gotta-have-it wish list of property features, and you'll receive real-time notifications tailored just for you. Ready to see it up close and personal? Scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Don't wait to find your perfect match. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.